I'm Kent Burgess, the village's business manager, and would just like to welcome you to this evening of sharing and conversation with the United States Forest Service, who's been our guests all week. Wow. Will I make it like in a Forest Service publication? I wore my green shirt, Stan. Just a couple of words of introduction. I think Holden was extremely fortunate to be able to have this group arrive. We had quite a, I think 11 folks from the regional office in Portland, and a companion group of 9 from the Chelan Ranger District, and I'm fortunate to have Sonny from Wenatchee National Forest joining us today. Sonny was supposed to fly into Lucerne today, but it was too windy, so he had to fly into Domke and hike down. So I'm glad you made it, Sonny. This week was kind of an idea that started with Dick Buescher and was shared with those of us in the village about getting a group of folks up to Holden and to spend some time studying the Railroad Creek Valley and to look at some possibilities for the future. I think the week has turned out to be everything that we hoped it would be. The thing that's probably been the most impressive for me, and I guess I want to share with the Holden community, is the real concern that the Forest Service has shown this whole week for the program at Holden and our life here in the village, for our care of creation and our concern for the environment of the Railroad Creek Valley. And through this week, they've just demonstrated their strong support and partnership with us. That's just come through in every meeting and in every session. And I guess I'd just like to express our deep appreciation for the partnership that we've had with the United States Forest Service. At this point, I'm going to introduce Lyle Laverty, who will guide us through the evening, which we anticipate will be approximately 40 minutes of presentation, and then as long as the energy remains after that, discussion and questions and dialogue between us. Lyle is the director for the Department of Recreation for the Regional Office of the United States Forest Service, which covers every national forest in Oregon and Washington. Is that correct? I'll turn it over to you, Lyle.
Thank you, Ken. One of the things, I guess, that has been the other part of the experience is that a partnership is two ways, and I just want to comment that this has been a delightful week for us because you folks have been the most open and gracious host to treat us just like family, and it really has been an interesting week for us all. And as you see and hear what some of the things that have unfolded for us this week, hopefully they'll be of interest to you. I'm not going to spend a lot of time because there's a lot of things that everybody has to share here, but I do want to take just a minute to introduce to the folks that worked on these different teams. And our approach this week was to look at really the uniqueness of the Holden, the Railroad Valley, and the Lucerne area, as well as the Lake Chelan, and trying to put some thoughts together on how we as partners can really do the things that are appropriate for that. And I guess as I listened to the presentations this afternoon, we had about 3.5 hours of a lot of information that was gathered this week. We're going to try to boil that down. Each group is going to spend maybe 7 or 8 minutes at the very most just sharing with you what we found and how we put some of that together. But if I had to leave a word to start with, I think there's harmony is a word that I guess I would pull out of the whole discussion that took place this afternoon is the harmony and sensitivity towards the resource and how things fit together, and it's that balance. And I hope that as you hear the presentations this afternoon or this evening that you'll be able to sense that as well. And we want to make sure that we have a chance for some questions and some dialogue and conversation with you after we get done. And we'll try to make sure that our presentations permit that to take place. And after the session is done tonight, you're welcome to stay with us, and I'm delighted to share with you the resource that was gathered by all the folks that worked in here. We approached the task by breaking the folks down into 6 different teams. And during the week, we ended up combining the different teams to look at the different resources and how some of them fit together. And if I try to capture what these teams were, and then I'll introduce you to all the folks that participated in that. But the first group that we broke down was what I'm going to call a relationship team, because we looked at the relationship of Lucerne, of Donkey, and of Holden, and how it all fits together in relationship with the rest of the lake. And there were some of us that worked on that. We had another group that looked at the corridor from Lucerne up to Holden, and you'll be hearing from that group. We had two groups that looked at trails. One group that looked at the internal trail system and the opportunities, and then another one that looked at an expanded trail system. And those folks began to come together, because you can't look at the internal system without looking at the external. So you'll hear from those folks. We had another group that looked at the cultural and the historical aspects of the area, and that group then combined with the last group, which was the group that dealt with the interpretive opportunities that existed, and not only here in Holden, but in the whole the total area. And you'll be hearing from those folks. But let me go through the list here and introduce the folks to you, because these are the folks that brought a whole wealth of information from their own professional ranks, as well as their personal experiences. And I think when you see the results of this, you'll see that, you know, it's that coming together that really makes it the week just exactly what we enjoyed. First, let me introduce the folks from the Chelan District and the Wenatchee National Forest. And I'm just going to ask them to stand up and stay stand up until everybody's introduced, and you have a chance to see who they are. First one is Susan Sanford. Susan's an information specialist on the Chelan District. Stan Hinatsu, the recreation forester on the Chelan District. John Boss, who's a rec planner. Where's John? He's over here. Al Murphy, the district ranger. Ken Dahl, who's the wilderness specialist. Rick Acosta, who's the resource assistant. Marsh Haskins, the fire management officer. And Randy Nyman, who's the silvicultural reforestation specialist on the Chelan District. You guys just stay standing, because we have a bunch of people that came from the regional office in Portland. Let me first start with Denny Rao. Denny? Denny works in the Interpretive Services Group with Jim Kaiser. I'm sorry, that was a mistake. Oh, Jim Pollock. Where's Jim Pollock? Jim Pollock's the group leader for the Interpretive Services in the regional office. Jim Kaiser is our regional archaeologist. And a great distinction, but the folks work very, very closely together. Gail Troop, a regional historian. And Gail has been acting as our group leader for developed sites, which takes care of all the campgrounds, ski areas, and such around the region. So, Gail Troop. Joe Higgins. Joe's a group leader for wilderness and dispersed recreation. He handles all the wilderness areas. Got the program responsibility for wild scenic rivers and trails and a variety of things. So Joe brings that background. Jack Stiverson. Jack is our trails type person there, and is handling the computerized information system that is just a dynamite program. Jack's a champion for that. Jackie Dietrich. Jackie is our Wild and Scenic River program manager, and is responsible for planning on Wild and Scenic River planning in Oregon, and it's the largest single planning effort in Wild and Scenic Rivers across the country, and Jackie's taken that one. Warren Bacon. Warren's a landscape architect, and also functions as a rec planner, and heads up that group in the regional office. And Dick Buescher, deputy director. And this is the group of the Forest Service folks. Now, this group wouldn't be complete without the Holden folks. I think I have a list of all the Holden folks here. Jackie, and I'm going to try to do the names here. Brosma? Close. Kirk Salveson.
Kirk's taking a shower.
All right. I bet he's going to come back in costume is what he's going to do. Randy Kahn. Randy, okay. Dave Harris. Dave Peterson. And Carl Comer. And Tom Smith. And Todd Thorne. I guess Todd's not here, right? Okay, and Jim McGrath.
Jim, is Gary Anderson?
Just Gary Adams. I will pay dearly for this. Gary Adams is our budget coordinator. I told you I would pay dearly. I am sorry, Gary. And last but not least, I'm holding this Kirk Burgess. Yes. Kent, I'm sorry, I did it wrong again.
That's all right, you ditched me.
This is the cast of thousands that participated this week, and it was really good. Just a little quick, I went on the process. We met when we came up Monday. Had an overview of what Holden was all about, and we had a chance to just experience a little bit about the Holden community itself. Tuesday we broke up into the groups and everybody went out in the field and began the information gathering. And in our great haste to get down to Lucerne, Kent went back and he brought us some lunches and went back and we loaded up in the car and drove down to Lucerne. And we got down there and said, where's Kent?
the other rig.
We thought he was in the other rig and they thought he was in ours. But anyway, our apologies to Kent because we...
But you did get the lunches.
We did get the lunches, yes. I'm not going to really take any more time other than just again to tell you that it's really been a great week for all of us. And we've also had the advantage of being able to be together as a staff and working on a particular project all at the same time, which is uncommon for regional office staff to be able to have that opportunity and that experience. I'm going to start with kind of our flow this evening, and we're going to take you from Lucerne. We'll talk about the corridor, we'll talk about the trails, and we'll talk about the cultural resources and the interpretive opportunities. And that will be the kind of the flow that we're going to go in. John Boss is going to take us to Lucerne. What I suggest, if you would, is let us just go through the presentation first, and then we'll open it up for questions after the last one is done.
Thank you, Lyle. When I first came to the Chelan Ranger District, I was sitting around the office on my second day, not really knowing what my job was, and had a great opportunity to come up here. Stan Hanatsu took me up to Lucerne and also took me to Holden. I fell in love with the district that day. So it's kind of neat to come back here and do some in-depth planning for this area. Basically what we did, we looked at the Lucerne Bar and divided it up into three nodes. One node was the portal area, which as some of you know is where the Lady of the Lake unloads for passengers. It's also the area where the commercial barges come into. The other area that we looked at was the day use area, which encompasses Railroad Creek. It also encompasses some private land here, which is under lease to the Lake Chelan Boat Club. Then we had another area, which is a developed campsite. There's just a few campsites in there now. We also have an administrative site here, the Lucerne Guard Station, which kind of it could fit into either the day use area or the developed campsite area. So we looked at those three areas and looked at what kind of improvements could be done there. Basically, looking at the portal area, the one thing that we all noticed was the area was not as attractive as perhaps we would like it to be. So we're looking at the possibility of doing some vegetative screening along this area here. If you've ever been there, it's kind of like getting into a gravel parking lot or a gravel pit. So we wanted to improve the appearance in this area by putting some vegetative screening in. The other thing that we noticed about the area is that when visitors get off the boat, there's really no information to direct them throughout the Lucerne Bar. And we thought some kind of information station here would also be a good idea. And along with that, of course, some bathrooms in the same area. Another thing that we thought of in this area was doing some kind of work as far as putting in a divider here to help perhaps create a one-way flow of traffic with the buses that come down from Holden to pick up visitors. And then the other thing we thought of was during the summertime, it does get pretty hot here, maybe to put up some kind of kiosks or some kind of structures where people can get out of the sun and sit down while they're waiting to catch the boat on the way out, or if they just want to sit down when they first get there to orient themselves. Looking at this area here, the day use area, we didn't have a lot of planned ideas as far as development. We want to come up with some better signing for getting to the Railroad Creek trailhead and to get to the trails that go up to Donkey Lake. We did want to provide some better signing here there's a whole area here which at one time had quite a bit of development in it, apparently, and we wanted to leave this area open for the possibility of future development. Talking to some of the local folks around here, it didn't seem at this point that there was really any need or desire for development, but we did want to leave that option open in the future. So we didn't really do anything with this area in between the guard station and the private land that the boat club has. The other area that we looked at then was this area over here, the developed campsite area. This area serves as a campsite for people who come in and moor their boats here. And one of the things we wanted to do here was look at perhaps putting in another docking facility, because we're getting a feel that people are being turned away from camping in this area here simply because there's not enough room to pull up and dock your boat here. So we're thinking about putting in another boat dock here that might hold as many as 16 to 20 boats. And then along with that, we would put in a breakwater right here, you know, so that the dock here doesn't get beat from the wave action. Along with that, if we're going to put in 16 to 20 additional spots for boats, you know, we might consider the possibility of doing the same thing with campgrounds, having 16 to 20 campgrounds in here with perhaps some showers. It wouldn't be a real extravagant site, but it would be somewhat improved over what it is now. So we'd be looking at adding sites, but also doing some upgrading as well. Then the other area we looked at here was this area at the guard station, and thinking of ways that perhaps we could eliminate some of these docks along here. There are several docks along here which are unused. There is a private dock which is used, but we thought perhaps we could put in a dock at the guard station that could help private boaters who want to just come up for day trips, or even for people who belong to the boat club. They could moor their boats overnight here. One of the things we thought of was retaining this dock here as kind of a temporary, using it as a temporary dock to unload your supplies and then come over here and moor your boat in this area here. Along with that, we would also need to put in another breakwater, once again, to reduce some of the wave action. This part of the lake does get pretty rough, from what I understand. As far as other things, I said we would be taking out some of the docks. There's kind of a small bay here, which serves as somewhat of a swimming facility in the summer. We'd probably be doing some kind of modification there. One of the things that a person suggested to me just prior to getting this presentation started was that we could even use this one dock here to the lady of the lake as the breakwater and simply add on to it, because there is some cribbing in there supporting it. So there's lots of possibilities in this area. You need to hold questions for now, Lyle?
No, that's too bad. Okay.
Thanks,
John.
Yeah.
I got to work with the corridor team, and we covered the area from Lucerne all the way to the village, which is 12 miles. Kent says I have about 8 minutes to cover it, so if I'm talking fast, I'm trying to go faster than a mile a minute. What we wanted to look at was the scenic qualities in the area, the forest types along here, and elements of forest protection that we just to look at within the area here. We're also looking at the opportunities for management. We're trying to identify views to be maintained or enhanced. The main thing which really struck clear to me is coming back here after looking at this 8 years ago, the forest is not static, it's always changing. Views are always changing. We're trying to identify some of these views which we feel are quality views, and they could use a little bit of just keeping them the way they are, a little bit of enhancement to improve them. I'll give you a couple of examples. One here at the switchbacks areas and the other one up at the village of things to do for the views. Okay. Also looking at protection element, we're looking, as we're going through here, timber stands, where possibly we might want to do some vegetation work for the fire protection element. In case a wildfire gets started, we want to be able to hold it outside the village. Also along with this whole idea of this, there are good views and there are some bad views. We're looking at areas where we could improve the views, rehabilitate them, help areas out that could use a little bit of help, like planting and covering up some negative elements. And A concern of Holden all the way through this has been obtaining their annual firewood supply. So I'm going to kind of run through the corridor now, starting here. We divided the corridor up into areas we call the cells. There's six of them. Each one is pretty distinctive, either in the view potential or the terrain. We came up with this map. We inventoried the whole thing. These lines and these arrows are views of what you can see from the road. Some of them are little names of exactly what you're looking at. Long views, short views. Covered all everything you might want to stop and give you an ooh and all along the way, as well as bad stuff. The tailings, for example. The little squiggly lines above and below are different forest types. I mean, there's a whole big diversity in what's out there. So I got a few slides to kind of help me out here with what I'm talking about as I go. Can't turn it on. Okay, the first one, the switchback cell, starts at the lake. You've just traveled up lake, you've been on the water, you've been looking up into the hills. As you climb up through the switchbacks, you quite physically are climbing into the mountains in a very short time. You're up there where you're looking at down below, so your whole perspective is changing. The emotions, the whole feeling that goes along with these views, for some people is fear as you're climbing up the switchbacks, others is anticipation, you're climbing in there. For the people who don't want to look back on the glimpses of the lake, they can look and see seasonal colors such as a dogwood. If they look out the other side, they can see the blue waters of the lake. We also turn around and look down as if what kind of feelings you're feeling as you're going down the switchbacks. And it's the same sort of deal. There's some anticipation, a little bit of fear as you're going back down the switchbacks. So a lot of emotion into the switchbacks. The first example of vegetation enhancement to preserve views was when I came up here in 81 doing this plan. There's a couple places on the switchbacks where you had fantastic views of the lakes. And when I'd driven bus in 78 a couple times, I had people stop, want to get up and walk down and take pictures from there on because it was just so awe-inspiring. When we came up this time, we almost drove past it because it wasn't the same. The trees. Some of the trees in there that were this tall have doubled in height and they're starting to block that view out. Opportunity to remove some of these trees in the foreground to open that view back up again. I'm not looking. Well, as you keep on going, you enter the dance camp cell area. Here you've leveled out of the, you've stopped climbing, you've got flat ground on either side of you. Sense relief for some people. You can start looking into the trees, looking around a little more. There's some areas where we have some old growth ponderosa pine in there. Views. There's some opportunities to preserve some of these stands where in the foreground, with the addition of the road and everything, there's been enough disturbance. There's a lot of smaller trees and brush growing up. They're beginning to block out some of the views of these trees, which is a fairly interesting feature of this area and an opportunity to preserve some of these views into there. Thinking also of the views, when you're going through dance camp headed down, there's a little bit of apprehension because the bus drivers stop, there's silence, and you gear down and what you're feeling on the way down is the ending of the trip. You're climbing down to the lake. Views at this time would be appropriate to help ease some of these feelings. Going on, a little farther, you get into what we call the narrow cell. That's that stretch of road, which you're pretty much on a steep side hill. You can look out across the valley quite a ways. On this side, in most ways, you're either looking into a cut slope or blasted rock. You tend to get drawn with big cross valley views, which you don't really get anywhere else in the valley if you're traveling up. The other thing is you're traveling along pretty fast through this area. It's flat ground, the buses are rolling pretty good. You don't get a lot of time for detailed looks. If the bus has ever slowed down and you can look above in some of the rocks seasonally, you can see some real beautiful areas of color with your various flowers in there, especially right now this time of year. But the only thing we really want to do in this particular area is maintain those cross valley views, and vegetation below the road has been growing up. We want to look at opening up some of those areas and just knocking down some brush basically in some areas to get these views back. As you approach the 7 mile area, You, for the first time since you've left the lake, you again see flowing water nearby. River Creek is fairly close. You've kind of entered back to the valley bottom again. There's a diversity in species in the area as far as trees. There's a whole different feeling of the forest, different viewing areas. Some opportunities for management of vegetation. Again, we noticed some elements of fire protection came in here. Some opportunities for that. After you get, lost 9 mile. There's another one after the 7 mile sale. That's a long stretch in through here, which is 9 mile. You've got a couple views on up here. Now you're starting to break out and you're seeing some of the major mountain peaks around the area. A few places the river is still close. You know you're getting close to Holden because a lot of times in this area you start seeing people walking on the road. You know you're getting somewhere. There's a couple corridors here where it looks really hemmed in. The ground is flat and there's opportunity to get back off the road in various areas. Finally, when you do break around the corner, you cross 10 Mile Bridge. That's basically where the Holden cell is. There's some views like this down near 10 Mile area, which really gets you pumped. I mean, you're getting close to the mountains. You notice this thing in the foreground, it's the tailings. There's people all over the road there. You know you're just about there. The anticipation, I mean, you've had the long ride, you're here, you're just about here, and as you continue down through that corridor, that last stretch around the corner, there's trees that kind of direct you right through the village. There's a peak, a glimpse of Dunnville in the background. You get to the village, and you're finally here, the trip is over. I said I'd mention a couple examples of vegetation management. It became apparent that as you get to the village, if you're not in the first bus, all you see is when you get here, you gotta stop, you're confined to this bus for a while. You're looking at the back end of another bus. It's not the big final wow when you get to the village. And our team looked at an easy way of modifying this. As you come in, the buses stop right up in here, and you can start to see the buildings off on this side. You're screened from view as you come in here. And we looked at a way of trying to finally get the big wow when you get here. And through some creative genius, this area out here where the ballpark is, where the volleyball courts are right now it's gravelly. It really pulls your eye into that area as you pull in the village and you see power pole, gravel, and some dumped rock and stuff like that. It doesn't really do much. The concept here would be to keep the village fairly vehicle free. As you come into that area where it is rocky now, what would happen if the vehicles pulled off and you had a major loop area like this, you had some vegetative screening along here, and you had a place where the pedestrians, the guests, passengers could get off right here, and as they climb out of this bus, if you go stand down there, you see everything from here. You have the whole view of the mountains are all the way around you. I mean, you sit there and they'll just want to stand around and stare for a while. From there, if there's a luggage vehicle, it can come in later on or whatever. The main thing is that people would approach the village on foot, walk through this, and take in the whole village, not in a non-cluttered, non-traffic sort of situation. The logistics of moving the luggage is really quite easy. The vehicles can turn around, pull around here, get ready to go down, whatever, parking area over here. It's something that can be done to get the final wow when you're here. It's just an opportunity. That's some of the stuff we came up with.
Good. Thanks.
You bet.
Trails.
Try to talk against it, but you're not going to watch the show over here. Okay, the clock's ticking. Our objective is to develop a system of summer and winter trails to provide a variety of experiences and difficulty levels that best meet the visitors' needs and desires. And to do this,
you really can take your time.
You're
doing
good.
This is how we got it.
Okay. Anyway, you can read this now for yourself now that you've watched that. To accomplish this objective, we had to come down here and really come down to this last statement to talk about who are the users and what are their needs and desires. And summarize all that we waded through the village, we came up, there's walkers. People want to just go for walks or strolls. Okay, this is up here for you to read to catch up on after the show's over there, too. Our best estimate of what sort of the level of use that means from the village is we feel there's about 75% of the visitors that come here go on walks and strolls. For day hikes, about 10% of the folks here in the village do that, and for overnight, at the max, 5%, usually more 2-3%. So based on that, this being, you know, kind of a reflection again of who the users are, what their needs and desires are, we set about making up our system. If I can get some light on this, or all right, here we go. By the way, this is a combined presentation for both trails groups. We're not going to have to. For starters, we are going to deal with the walkers. Obviously, that's the highest demand, so we'll start there. One trail loop is the Miner's Village Trail Loop. Come up Miner's Village and have a stroll. This would be trails that are social, get walking, in other words, are wide enough to accommodate a couple people walking together so they can talk. They're very smooth, they're very low grade. Also, this area has tremendous potential for access for physically challenged people, and we work towards that end. Our opportunities out there are interpretation in history, flora, and fauna. Also, an opportunity for cross-country skiing. Anytime we build a trail that is for strolling or walking of the easy sort, or even a day hiking trail that's an easy trail that's also usable for a cross-country ski trail, it takes the same sort of grades for cross-country skiing. Second trail loop would be the Holden Mine Copper Falls Loop. That would start over here in the village, come across the footbridge, then we move on over. This you can take in the mill site, you can take in the Portal Museum, come along here and take an old trail that comes into the changing room, come on top of the upper level, and come out here and ooh and all the views here, and then catch this little trail that we'll build. We'll talk about that a little bit more, and on down and around and back out. There's an opportunity there for interpreting the mine history. An alternative to that that works off of that would be to come up here. This would be a more difficult trail, however, is to hike up to Copper Falls and come on down and then take all that in also. Also, the loop is available for cross-country skiing. Another loop, the tailings loop. This also is a series of loops almost. After the rehab project's done, there's a beautiful chance for some trails around here that can be used for cross-country skiing, that can be used for joggers. There's going to be vegetation islands out here that will break up some of the monotony. The crushed gravel will keep the dust down. It'll be a much more desirable place. Some of the resurfacing here are going to provide some very favorable slopes for beginners. So you don't have to be an expert in climbing the mountain walls to go ski downhill. Also, this will bring in another piece of trail tied to the mining. This utilizes some of the roads like the goat trail. That's what the rehab people call the access road. That's what this is. Also, continue to utilize this segment of the goat trail and replace the culverts with a bridge crossing there. So, again, ski loops, day hiking loops. Oh, also associated with this trail is there's a very deep little marsh habitat here that is starting to recover from all the washout from, and air-blown debris from the tailings, and it's starting to turn into a very interesting area, so inter-possibilities there also. Our next loop is that all of these loops are social trails. In other words, again, wide enough to accommodate two people. Is the 10-mile loop is a walk, I mean a little longer than just a stroll, and it had that is that starts. We'll start here, come across the top of the village. The trail would be relocated. It's currently down here. We would abandon it and rehab it, move it up, and come across here. The reason for doing that is it's too close to the road. There's a tremendous opportunity out here to pick up different habitats and different forest types, aspen stands, and a tremendous nature walk, and in effect, have a real stunning approach to 10 Mile Falls. You can hear it coming, you turn the corner, and there it is. And a really nice system. It will also hook in down here to this leg of the trail, which is a riparian area, a streamside area. Again, a good example for interpretation of what a streamside habitat's all about. And this would come back and hook into the present nature trail. Opportunities there are 10 Mile Falls, streamside habitat, interpretive natural history, and a tremendous cross-country ski loop. Village loop is another. Our next loop is right here. It utilizes the present nature trail and the fire road, the present fire road going around the village, and just for a stroll. Start to move out now to longer hikes, again working off the idea of you come in close, that's where the biggest need is, and you start working out. The Monkey Bear Loop. How many people here have ever heard of Monkey Bear Falls? Good. You're going to hear more about it. Or 9 Mile Falls, if you've heard that one. This would be an easy day hike, also for social. You would pick up here at 10 Mile Falls, stay at that same level, come on out, and then turn a few climbing turns, and over a foot log, and for viewing into the fall right here. Another aspect to this trail is we'd also come across down here, put in a bridge across Railroad Creek, and hook it into the lower Railroad Creek trip, so the whole thing forms this giant loop back into the village. Again, this would also be an easy trail available for cross-country skiing. Another great aspect about this, and something we don't know but are excited about the potential, is fishing. We want to check out whether these streams are good fish habitat. One way we feel like we can attract people away from the wilderness area in a positive manner is to offer fishing someplace else in the wilderness area. So we are going to follow through and see if we can do that. While we're out here, there's a great opportunity for some old skid roads to put in a 9 mile ski trail. We would not make treads on the ground for summer trails. These would simply trim the brush back off the skid roads, mark it when the snow falls in, then you have some ski trails that connect then into these trails right here, which are also utilized in ski trails. So again, you have loops upon loops. Lots of diversity, lots of chance to do different things. Our next trail, and works into all these loop systems, is Tailings Bypass. This is a brand new trail. Taking off from here, well, let's take it from the other way, because it's the way we thought of it. We were standing up here on the Upper Mill site, and tremendous views. Again, a great place for winter to ski up there and enjoy the scenery. And we just started looking around. We know this is a steep trail. Not much we can do with that in the winter. It's not really usable for easy levels, even for hikes. So we started looking around and said, what about dropping a trail out here? And that would become the Lower Railroad Creek Trail, so people hiking up from Lucerne could bypass the tailings and the village and keep right on going to the trailhead in the wilderness if that was their trip plan. The other tremendous advantage that this gives us is we can bypass the whole work project with this trail too. 2 minutes. Remember, I'm covering for two groups, right? I knew that was coming. Okay, ventilator trail is an extension here, comes off of the road. There's some old road beds here. We take advantage, drops to the creek, a chance again to look at fishing opportunities, hooks around, crosses the creek, comes into the ballpark. We're looking at creating some camping opportunities at the ballpark, again, cross-country skiing. From the ballpark back to the drain fields right about here, we're looking at taking this road and turning it into a trail simply by narrowing it a bit, making it a large social trail. Again, cross-country skiing, access to the trailhead, making a transition to wilderness. Right now, you come right out here to the end, and boom, you're in the wilderness. There's no easing into it. It's just all of a sudden, from mine to breathe, or his story, if you will, into the wilderness without much in the way of getting ready. Again, we said fishing. Yeah, we mentioned that. Okay, moving right along. The Mountain View Trail. This, we take off from the miner's village and turn away. This is a new trail, climb quite a bit. It would be a more difficult trail and it would be a day hike. And come across the avalanche chutes up higher and catch a series of benches, and it's a scat broken timber slope. You have openings, you have stands of timber. It's a southern exposure. It would melt out quickly, be available for long seasons in some shade, so it doesn't cook in the summer. Scenery, nature trail, in some ways too. Loops come down here and it will join the 10 mile nature trail or loop. 10 mile basin. These would be the series of switchbacks above, and it would give it access into 10 mile basin. There's a beautiful stand of old growth up in there. Good place for a camp, for some overnight use. Somebody wants to go up for their very first experience and still not be too far from the village. And again, the question about, can we do anything with fish habitat above the falls? We're working off of that trail on the ridge here. This goes beyond our difficulty trail rating, and we call it a mountaineering way trail. Put a route or scramble trail in there for someone of mountaineering interest to give them access to the top of the ridge. Here's a chance for safe access to the top of the ridge. Going up the couloirs or going up this face can be fairly dangerous because of rock fall. Tremendous scenery, exploration, challenge, vigor, all those wonderful things. I can't reach it up there. Right there. Just for lack of something better, I call it the pass trail. It would be a very minor trail, most difficult day hike trail that would tie into the Company of DeVore trails and give access to Hilgard Pass and 10 Mile Pass in the wilderness area, alpine passes, overnight backpack trips to Stehekin. Both, you know, DeVore Creek Company Creek offers a backpacking loop to go to and from the village. Likewise, people from Stehekin have a nice loop into Holden that could go other ways and create big backpacking loops. The next trail would be the 9 mile traverse. Essentially coming out of 10 Mile Creek, it joins into this trail right here, way up there somewhere. That's how some feel after you're like, oh, good. Comes across here, crosses 9 Mile Creek, and comes down. It joins into the Monkey Bear Falls Trail and into the 10 Mile Trail for a loop back to the village. Again, the idea, what about the fishing potentials above 9 Mile Falls? Is that habitat that we could work on in stock? More fishing, more camping. Working off of this trail this would be more difficult, by the way, more difficult day hike. This trail would be a most difficult trail going up to the Yale Mine, or however you say that, whatever. And there we're looking at scenery, ooh and ah. That's what this is too. We're just improving as you go up. And self-exploratory mine history. From there also would be access for cross-country travel into the alpine setting of the Riddle Basin. More vigor, more challenge. And the possibility up near the mine of putting a shelter again, to attract people who are starting out on their first backpacks, and maybe would find that as a neat opportunity to get into the high country and have a shelter available. Working off of the mine trail, then, it's off the map, is a Lightning Ridge Trail proposal. Again, it follows the high country of Lightning Ridge and comes down Lightning Ridge at Lucerne. Overnight backpacking to Lucerne, we could put in a series of shelters, we could put in more campsites, all kinds of possibilities there. It could also, for the rigorous backpacker, could hook into a big, big loop trip, and they could come back on the Lower Railroad Creek Trail. So you would have a tremendous backpacking adventure coming back to the village. Lower Railroad Creek Trail, pretty much as it is with some modifications. We would make a few turns and side trails that could get down to the creek, again to provide for fishing. We could then provide some campsites so that people could stay overnight. And my time is up, so I will shut up.
Thank you.
Yeah. Keep going.
Jack, are you going to do the interpretive?
Sure.
All right.
You want the cultural first and then the interpretive?
That's right. Who's choreographer? I screwed up on my list.
Right. Larry is a choreographer. You don't.
The historic resource is going to be quite quick. Basically, we came up with four sort of bits of information about the historic resource. The first is that Holden, as a piece of the Howe Sound Mining Company operations in Railroad Creek Valley, is in fact an historic site. No two ways about it. It meets all the criteria for the federal process to designate something as a historic site. And it must be done for the feds to operate in this area. And we do a lot of operating with you and for you and all of that. So what this leads to is that we need to initiate and then complete the legal process to document Holden's historic status. This would include both the physical structures, we're sitting in one right now, and a great number of others, and documentation and accumulation of written and oral histories. So that's a project that needs to be undertaken and completed. Coming out the end of that project, we suggest a National Register nomination. The National Register of Historic Places is a fairly prestigious thing on which we put archaeological and historic sites that have significant historic values on the local, regional, or national level. And this probably is certainly local and probably regional level, and some ties to national given that it was part of the war effort. There are, in fact, advantages to Holden from the nomination to the National Register of Holden Village and the surrounding pieces of the Howe Sound Mining Company. Those advantages, we listed several, which will be listed in the document that's produced. They can be summarized as the precursor, the foundation for applying for grants and aid to help with the historic preservation of this site. And there are a number of things that we came up with that will be put in detail. Lastly, number four, and probably the most important for the Holden Village as an entity, is that then a management plan for this historic site would be prepared. And keep in mind, the historic site includes this part of the site, which is private structures on federal land. It includes private structures on private land, and federal structures on federal land. So that whole thing, there's historicity of Holden and the Howe Sound Mining Company. So what we need to do in partnership with Holden is prepare a management plan that would detail the sorts of things you would do for historic upkeep and the sorts of things that would require consultation with the State Historic Preservation Office and other federal agencies that get involved in this. But such a management plan would in fact facilitate your consultation with these entities and also facilitate the district's consultation at the same time. So basically, that's the historic resource at Holden in a four-part nutshell.
Great, thanks, Jim. Now, Jackie.
Hopefully my words will be in proportion to my size and we'll be done. the interpretive group had both Susan and Rick from the district who are in the process of looking at the entire Lake Chelan basin and at the interpretive opportunities from beginning in Chelan and going all the way up to Stehekin and back. But we did choose to focus ours on the Lucerne and Holden area. And we came up with these interpretive goals, which was kind of laying the foundation for all of the interpretation opportunities then that would come from those. And these can be summarized as this. Give people a sense and a feel for the history of the area. As a Holden staff person sitting in, I think the one benefit I really gained from this whole week was just having my eyes open to the history that's here and not realizing how much there is. Provide a better understanding of the area's opportunities. That seems really unclear to people from when they get on the boat to when they're down there. Everyone seems a bit confused about how you get anywhere and what's even available. Develop interpretation in line with all the partners. Partners being Holden, the boat company, the donkey resort, the Forest Service, the Park Service up at Stehekin, Chelan Chamber of Commerce. And then all of these have their own little partners, ours being our constituency and affiliation and heritage with the Lutheran Church. But we thought, you know, wouldn't it be great if all of these partners might even come to an agreement that we were going to all work towards enhancing the visitor's experience through a better understanding of their environment, and also maybe working towards better stewardship and responsibility towards the environment. If all these partners could come together and just have that one basic common goal, look how much we could do. Offer a wide spectrum of interpretive opportunities for all ages and backgrounds. We realize how diverse the whole population is that has contact with these areas and the need to provide such a spectrum of possibilities. And what was really quite fun was for Kirk and I to try to give input about what the kind of average guest at Holden was. We can elaborate more if you're really interested. offer accessible facilities and programs accessible to both physically challenged and other people who may hesitate to take advantage culturally maybe of this place as well. Enhance the visitor's experience through a better understanding of the environment. That was a real important one. Along with that was increase their sense of stewardship and responsibility towards the environment. Assisting the Forest Service and the Park Service with the resource protection, being a partner in preserving and maintaining what is here in harmony with the creation. Give people an accurate picture of Holden. There are lots of myths that people have as they have contact with this whole thing about what happens up at Holden. Who are these weird people that are up there? Do you get converted when you come here? What happens? And thought that there was a lot that could be done with just a better description of what Holden is and have a better understanding of our identity and what we're about. And then reach out to minority populations and increase their visitation through partnerships and ethnic-specific programs. We especially are aware of the migrant population that's in this area and how much more we could do to relate to their needs to enjoy this incredible region. So we sort of worked hard on deciding what those goals were and then moved into what we wanted to communicate in basically four categories. And those included orientation information. Those are the kinds of things like the physical geography, the natural history, the opportunities, how things are managed, the transportation, getting from one place to another. Letting people know that this is their national forest. It doesn't belong to the Forest Service. Learn that. Management. management activities is another category. That being some communicating or interpreting some information about the partnerships that are involved. What does it mean that Holden has a special permit? The partnerships that Holden has with its contributors that we aren't funded by anybody, but it's individuals. The tailings rehab that's going on. The land allocations. What is wilderness? What's the distinction between the different designations and what does that mean? And then a third category was understanding the environment, the natural resources, the variety of ecosystems, the seasonal variations, the migration of the deer, the weather, the wildflowers, the natural cycles, the changes in the pests that are in the trees and some of their diseases, the human effects on the environment, what are the consequences of people living here, the glacial history. So the natural resources was the other category. And then Jim already talked about, but the historical and cultural, the mining day life, trying to communicate what that was all about, interpret that to people. The mine construction and the technology of the mine is an interest in the architecture of how this place was built in such a very short time and was so well built, and their effort to make it such an ideal community. So those were the categories. And then we continued through the whole process. We just made a decision we were going to try to go as far as we could with the interpretive planning process. And we didn't get to the final end product. And so we stopped and decided we would just take time and brainstorm what we thought some possible end products might be. We kind of called these bullets or nuggets. I'll just throw them out. They were kind of brainstorming. We were certainly alerted to the possibilities of interpretation up at Winston. And I think having Tootie and Bob and Leroy here have made us all aware of what opportunities exist out there and the accessibility that they talked about in the trails for the physically challenged. And developing that as a resource potential for a real varied audience. The possibilities up at Honeymoon Heights to just kind of what we call discover a ruins in the jungle, that you're just kind of walking through this sort of natural area and then all of a sudden there's concrete foundations and walls that you suddenly begin to be able to see a place that was there and bustling and operating and livable at one time. The Mining Museum, I think they pointed out all the possibilities for developing much more things in the interior and praise the construction of the exterior, but there was so much more we could do with the interior and the insides. We talked about trying to do more living history in the village. Somebody commented that obviously the Holden Village staff likes to dress up, and so maybe periodically we could have a Holden Miner in the village, and somebody who tries to recreate it maybe through plays or somehow to capture the life that was once here. Just hearing Tootie talk about how she was instructed to walk really quietly through the village to school and to not to disturb the miners because they were sleeping in these lodges around here, and helping children to understand what it was maybe like to live here. We talked about Holden's effort to maybe consider having earth stations or places of quiet meditation that would merge both the power and mystery of creation with the natural environment, and to have some site maybe where there's a place where you can hear the water, and to talk about that perhaps in a spiritual nature. And we call these earth stations, or places where we listen to the earth, maybe a meditative spot, maybe some John Muir quotes. We talked about, and some of you have heard about Holden's effort, during the summer we daily Bible study it's an important ritual for us, and that maybe we should begin to also focus on an earth study where we also listen to, you know, God speaking or creation speaking through the earth. We talked about the fact that already the village seems signed to the maximum, that we've got enough signage here, And in fact, maybe what we have is an overabundance, and it's time to take an inventory of all of our signage and to really decide what could be eliminated, what's directional, what's informational, and to maybe set some priorities about all of the signs. Maybe some of them can be temporary. We talked about improving the visual arrival at Lucerne, what perhaps we can do in the bus ride, doing more oral histories to fill in some of the research gaps that we have. So those were just some of the brainstorming ideas and nuggets that we had. So that's it.
Great, thanks, Terry. You can see just from the loaded information that you've seen in just this hour to this evening, the wealth of information has been gathered together and how many of the pieces all tie together. But I'm going to ask Dick if he would kind of maybe take on and fill in what happens next. And I think that's the important part of it. And then after Dick's done, we'll open up for questions and we can go on as long as you wish to go tonight because we have lots and lots of other things at the banker. So, Dick?
For just one second, though, I want to take you back to the point of beginning of all this. Because I think it's very relevant that it happens now at the end of what you've seen. A year ago when I was on teaching staff here in the summertime, I had in my head, and Lyle and I shared, the need for our group, the 11 of us that are here, to get out somewhere and do a team building exercise. But I'm also not much for touchy-feely things and artificial happenings, and so I thought, what if we could do something together that collected our talent? Because we often split and go in all directions in the region and busy schedules, never really share a common collective experience of the talents that are in our group. And so I thought about Holden because I was here and I've experienced this community and what it's all about. And I suggested it to then your then new director, Scott, and he was very enthusiastic. I had a very easy sell there. I called Sonny and suggested it to him on the phone, and then called him about 3 weeks later, and he wondered why I made the second call, because he'd already bought in and saw the potential value for the district and the community and our staff to work collectively on a real thing, a conceptual plan. Understand that it is based and consistent with the forest plan that's taken years to build and has just gone on the street, and that in fact this is a implementation, if you like, of the concepts, the standards, the guidelines that are elements of that forest plan, and it's critical that it must be, and it is. In fact, some of the things help that forest plan to happen. And so that was the beginning, and of course I suggested to Lyle and our staff, I had the easiest sell of anything I ever tried to sell, so it happened. Did it meet my personal expectations? In spades. One of the most wonderful things that happened this week is the team building was not for our 11 people. The team building was for everybody that worked together. And if you had been here the 3.5 hours this afternoon and you were a newcomer on the scene and had a rough idea what was going on, you'd have an extremely difficult time trying to identify who works in the regional office for the Forest Service, who belongs on the Chelan Ranger District, who are the doers, the executors of the Forest Service program, and who are the people from Holden, because we were all mixed together and interacting, and you'd never know it. Are all these things going to happen tomorrow? Money going to fly from the sky? No, folks, that's not going to happen. We know that. These are wonderful ideas. But we know something else. Those of us on our crew that have only been here a week and only in 1 week's experience with this place, those of you who may have had several years and everything in between, what Holden wants to do, Holden can do. And in the National Forest System, what a district ranger and his or her people want to do, they get done. These things can happen. Some will happen tomorrow. Some may prove not to be good ideas and may not happen at all. But it is a wonderful collective concept from the minds of a great number of dedicated, creative people. And I have every confidence that all the good things ultimately will happen. I said that to Scott, to Sonny, and to Murph, and Kent, when we brainstormed this whole process that my personal goal was to get from the point that I think that our agency and this community are at, and that is strong mutual respect, to the point where we are supplemental and complementary to the visitors to Holden, which of course are also owners and visitors of the National Forest, and make their stay more meaningful without, and this is so important, without intruding on this community and its mission and its ministry. And that we find that careful fine line between church and state, but more importantly, between the agency and this community. This plan can do just that and also serve the other visitors in the National Forest, which of course are not a part of this community and have every right to the excitement and service on their National Forest. So will it happen? You bet it'll happen. And it's been a real gift to me. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. All right, this is your time now. You've heard almost an hour of our time to share with you, and if you have any questions, comments, observations, feelings, we'd be delighted to entertain those, and I'm not going to try to answer them, but I'm going to pass them back to the folks that can. So if you have any comments, I've seen some of you jotting notes down and nodding heads and shaking heads and scratching heads, so it's over.
Who decides where the trails will go? Who actually now decides where the trails will go?
All right, who decides where the trails will go? I'm going to pass that to Kent.
The process for the trails is fairly involved. Each of these trails, when we go to do it, will involve environmental documentation. That will involve everybody getting together on that specific trail location and coming forth with issues and details, and it's that. We'll take all that information on the details then, and the actual layout will then probably happen between the district trail people and the SLO trail engineering folks. But it takes into account all the public input specific to that trail.
What's an SLO?
The supervisor's office.
I think also there's a perfect opportunity for Holden people to be also part of that location and that setting. So it's again that unique blending of that partnership to make that happen, specific on a project like a trail.
So there'll be people from Holden and the beach on a particular trail?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to find Mr. Murphy wants to build a trail and you folks don't want to have that.
We're building trails that we want to use, that people want.
That's right. Other questions? Yes.
I'd like to ask a couple of questions. You spoke a lot about people skiing. Are you talking about people coming up lake specifically to ski in the winter in the Holden area?
I'm going to, somebody from Holden want to take that one on.
Why don't you take that out, Kent?
Okay.
About how many people do you think would come into the Holden community to ski in a given winter?
I think we're finding that within the winter community in Holden, skiing is becoming one of the major activities here. Holden has made, I think, a decision, or at least in the past, that our goal is not to be just a recreational site. That I don't think Holden wants people coming here because it's a good place to ski. However, it's an activity that draws people into the environment, that gets them outside, and has been a major activity of the Holden winter community. I think we saw a lot of that happen unintentionally with the construction of the two bridges across Railroad Creek because of the rehab program and all the activity that took people on what we call this tailings loop, which is in no way designed to be that. But it became, I'd say, probably the most popular activity of the winter. A couple of the goals of starting to look at that is that prior to that, the only place people were heading was into the wilderness, pretty much up and back on the same trail with no kind of loop system. I think the goal is to enhance the recreational opportunities for the people who come to Holden during the winter. But I don't think the goal is to attract skiers to Holden.
Randy, you got a comment on that one?
Yeah, I
wanted to backtrack a minute to partly help answer Al's question, I think. As one of the people on the trail on the crew, along with Dave Peterson and Carl Comer, we hopefully were making an attempt at representing the village when we worked at proposing these trails, and I just wanted to be clear about that. And looking at the numbers, looking back at the history of requests and types of things that people seem interested in, that, as well as the general population coming up to hike this area.
I'd like to say something.
Yes.
50 years ago, I came here as a boy. And this was a mining community. Also, it was a Forest Service community. And it was open then to people to come and go. Even as a mining community, it was open to people to come and go here. It was operated very successfully. There was never no problems. And people came here and utilized this whole country. Oftentimes in the summertime, people came from the coast over and back over. It's always been that way. It's been an open community. I'd like to see it still be an open community.
Thanks.
Since I got from the Trails Committee when they talked to us this afternoon, too, is these trails were looked at somewhat incrementally, and it wasn't as all of this is going to happen at once. Instantly, there was going to be an intentional direction to it all based on need, based on use.
We had a chance to, the group that went down to Lucerne, we hiked up to Donkey and spent the morning with Sid Burns. And Sid made a comment, I jotted it down because I think it really captures, the at least for me, the spirit of what we were talking about this entire week. And Sid's comment was that, you know, it was good to be able to improve the quality without changing the character of the experience. And, you know, I guess if you could take that as a theme, you know, throughout all the discussion you heard from all these folks tonight, is that, you know, we're looking at how can we improve the quality, not only of the setting, but also the experience, without changing the character of that experience. And that really is, you know, a fine distinction to make, but I think it's really powerful words. And for me, it said, hey, that's exactly what we want to, that's what we're trying to do collectively. And you know, a lot of wisdom in those thoughts, and John goes down because it really fits.
I have a question about that.
Yes.
I heard you talking specifically about a lot of benefits that would accrue if we were to be part of the National Register of Historic Places. Do you see any potential harms specifically in, would it affect the character of the area if we were to join that register?
That's a good question. I didn't mean to give the impression that there was this whole plethora of benefits or advantages. They're really quite limited. They're not, you know, there's not 100 different things, and they're encapsulated by that one statement, essentially, grants and aid. There are really no downsides to that, because you have to understand the situation as it now exists. Right now, this site is eligible for listing on the National Register of Historic Places. That, anytime you do anything with it through your special use permit, or the Forest Service comes in and fixes the turnaround at the downstream end of the valley, or anything like that, that triggers a legal process that involves the State Historic Preservation Office and the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation. So whether or not you're listed on the register is immaterial to that. The status of the place remains the same. Listing on the register just allows you to use that as a plus when you go to a granting agency, a foundation, to say, we'd sure like a historic preservation grant so we can upgrade the old mine, the mill situation, so we can make it safe and retain its historic character. Now, maybe if I can put one word in your mouth or one thought, it's that you think that it might attract more people here because it's an historic site. I really doubt that very much. Largely because the entries on the National Register of Historic Places are not particularly uncommon. There's quite a number of them. It would, however, be sort of a neat point for the village itself to say, hey, we live here in a site that's on the National Register of Historic Places, and one of the points that often comes out in situations like this is the interesting part is that you're living here day to day in what many people have the idea of some kind of a monument, kind of a hands-off thing, but you put your hands on it every day. You live in it, you work in it, you deal with a number of visitors in it, et cetera, et cetera.
Let me add a comment to that. You know, my association with the village, one way or another, goes back to 1963, and that was my first view of the place, and I've had many since, and since become a part of your teaching staff. I think what's so wonderful here is the obvious dedication that's existed all those years to the historic integrity of this place, without being on registers or anything else, or having that as a propulsion to have to do it. Look at the roofs as you walk up tonight on the chalets. It'd be a lot simpler to go modern and to put on modern metal roofs, which shed the snow much more readily. You'd see no more need for those pictures in the orientation film about shoveling, or in the Four Seasons of Holden, about shoveling roofs. The village, not the Forest Service, has made the decision to stay with the historic integrity of this village. And they've done a fantastic job of it. You have, and all your antecedents. And so it's, you know, to me, it is an indemnification of what you stand for, and not an intrusion on what you want to do.
Thanks.
I have a question.
Yes.
Or a question and a comment. When the first group was talking, or the second group was talking about cutting down a few things so that people can see the lake again and what a wonderful view, the first thing that popped into my mind is, well, is the driver going to stop then every time somebody wants to take a picture? And that was just the small example of, yes, maybe being a registered in the Register of Historic Places won't make hordes of people come, but if you're registered in the Register of Historic Places, you have these wonderful ski trails, you have these wonderful 25-mile hiking things, you can get a hot shower here, you can have these multi-generational things for children because you're going to, you know, access these new constituencies. All of those things would, and then you're going to have the day camping area or the long-term camping area down the Lucerne area. Now, all of these things, when you add them up together, will increase the participants or the people who potentially will come to Holden. So what I'd like to hear is, so how will that impact the ongoing life of Holden and the other program that's been key to Holden? Then the comment that I had to make was that I think that the historicity of the place is very important, and the cultural aspect of that. It's been nice that Holden has maintained that. But also recently it's been said that Holden has been a retreat center longer than it's been a mining village. So I was wondering about this asking Holdenites to dress up like miners. I mean, it's kind of beyond corny. It's also reliving only a segment of the history of this place. But I would like an answer to the question about these potentially new people and the impact of that on the Holden program.
Wow.
Let Kim handle that.
Yeah. Kim, I'll go after you.
That bothered me too, because now the people in the Holden Village have quite a bit of control over the people passing through and staying here, and stressed strongly fire danger and how you must be alert to all dangers like that. But if it's open to everyone that just wants to pass through, they don't pack out their garbage. That's nice to say, but they don't. And they don't all smoke in a designated area and things like that, which then threatens the
village. Want to try it first? Bush is ready to go.
Oh, go. I'll fill in on the holes.
You better be ready. Just don't remember what we said our objective was. It was to complement the community experience at Holden without being intrusive. Remember that nothing changes in terms of how this place operates. That is up to the Holden Corporation and the decisions made by the board, and that will continue. It's open to any citizen of the United States that wishes to come here right now. There is no exclusion of anybody in this community right now. Anyone who wishes to pass through, passes through. The things we're talking about is for the 250,000 visitor days that exist here right now in the present program. This place operates at capacity right now. There's no suggestion from Holden to increase the capacity. And that would have to be where it came from. It's no suggestion of ours. And so when we talk about accommodating people at Lucerne Bar with an expanded campground, we're talking about Lucerne Bar. Whether they travel to here or not is up to who drives the Holden bus. And so they're not bringing cars on those 30-foot boats yet. And so that's, you know, keep that in mind. We are not talking about creating a new public campground or ski area or anything else. Part of the winter program right now, to answer your earlier question, the Wilderness Spirituality Retreat, which I participate in leading, uses skiing or snowshoeing, for those that don't ski, as a functional part of that retreat. And so and the wellness of people in the village, you know, instead of jogging, we're talking cross-country skiing. So we're talking about a program that we would participate in not because we're serving members of the Lutheran Church and the other denomination that visit here, but as citizens of the United States that have an opportunity to visit Holden through the rules of Holden. That's what we're talking about.
One of the things that we talked about as we spent our time down at Lucerne, we were very conscious, at least, about, you know, talking about the idea that what we wanted to do was to enhance the experience of the person that was coming to Holden. And that we were very conscious about that we weren't trying to invite new people to come to Holden, but we wanted that experience from the time you came up the lake, you know, the majesty of that trip, and then to come on, we just wanted to make that experience, you know, even richer. And, you know, the comment about, you know, trying to invite or suggest new people come to Holden really was not part of it. In fact, one of the things we talked about earlier on our goals was to, I would say, protect the sense of Holden right now. And we even used the word isolation of Holden. You know, that was one of the terms that was in our discussion, because we were very conscious of, that we didn't want to change, again, the character of the experience of Holden. So you raise a, you know, very, very interesting question, but I guess our whole discussion and focus was on, you know, how to enrich the experience of that person that's coming to Holden, not so much trying to advertise and say, hey, there's a great place to come up and Holden. You know, that's not going to change.
Yeah, the scenario that I saw was that you hear that there's great cross-country skiing up lake, and there's even a place you can stay for a couple nights. It's not super expensive. You get a hot shower, and so you decide to come, you know, you and your friend, and then you get a potato for dinner after, you know, 18 hours of cross-country skiing.
They might only come once.
So, you know, I mean, then there's pressures on, well, this isn't what I thought it was going to be or whatever. Sure. And then, yeah, it's Holden's responsibility to say, but this is our program and we will stand by it. But what does that do to relationship?
Let me offer another point. One of the reasons why for developing this trail system, right now, everything inside this area here, inside the red lines, is congressionally designated wilderness. Part of our charge as National Forest is to manage that land as untrammeled by human beings, where we just don't go in there and have a lot of visitation, a lot of social encounters, and a lot of, if you will, damage to the vegetation on the site. So right now, the primary detrails for the use of Holden, here's Holden right here, are up into this wilderness, okay? That's against our congressional direction. So what we're doing with this system, if you notice, all this is outside of the wilderness, what we've been talking about. All that area is outside of the wilderness. It's just as beautiful It's just as beautiful, but what we're doing is trying to substitute on a piece of ground that we have the ability to manage on. Okay, it doesn't. It's not congressionally designated wilderness. It's not that we're going to do trash it or anything to that effect, but we have more opportunities. We can build larger trails that are easier to get to. Those, you have the opportunity, well, there are some opportunities out here, but we don't want to expand on those opportunities to have wide trails. We want to have very narrow trails that are minimum impact on the ground. Out here, we can do that. We will have perhaps more impact on the ground, but on the our land management plan, that's an acceptable thing to build wider trails. So what we're doing is substituting. I'm not sure if there's additional mileage on here. There may be, but there's additional opportunities on here.
I think a point to be made is the registration process hasn't changed any there for anybody who wants to stay in the village has to be a registered guest. We're self-limiting by our housing, by our transportation, by our ability to heat buildings in the winter, by a lot of factors like that. Secondly, I think the observation I make is the Board of Directors made a commitment to increase the winter programming here by moving the kitchen facilities from this building and the dining facilities from this building into a much larger facility, which impacts all of our life here. So I just wanted to make sure that you're aware this isn't a Forest Service thing. Holden did some of this to themselves.
I guess the only thing I try to follow up on is in my time at Holden, much of what we've seen here, or a lot of what we've been has been presented, has been talked about in bits and pieces and fragments. And I think those who've had a long history with the village have seen bits and pieces of that happen, depending on who was here or who had a good idea. And part of our concern has been that oftentimes that hasn't happened with a lot of forethought. That we just all of a sudden somebody decides that there ought to be a trail sign here, or that maybe that we ought to put a log over the creek here because this would be better access. Our concern, I think, is that we get a comprehensive plan that builds on some expertise that Holden hasn't had, and that we kind of were able to systematically implement that. Because let's be honest, over Holden's 20 or almost 30 years, we've made some big mistakes up here too. And I think it's come through not good planning. I think that if we have a plan that maybe we can proceed in a safer, kinder way to the environment, and also be a greater service to the guests that are coming.
Yes, go ahead. I have some pretty pointed questions, but first I think that it's been a real sort of a positive experience for your group, and I think that's really good. I'm concerned about a lot of things that this plan, and I'm just going to start out. For one thing, where does the money come from that pays for the campsites, the trails, the showers, the everything I've heard? And I know that they aren't all going to happen. I'm aware of that. But I think at some point, Holden Village has a responsibility to say no to further development. And I don't know when that is, but I'm real concerned that that it's just more things to manage. Do we have to, is the Forest Service going to clear cut another area to pay for trails near Holden Village? And if that is, then I'm a person who says no. And I know that that's a real simplistic way of looking at it, but ultimately, the money has to come from somewhere, okay? And if it's not socially responsible, and I know that your managers are managers of forests, but if it's not socially responsible, as far as I'm concerned, I am going to say no, and that's just kind of where I come from. We talk about Glacier Peak Wilderness Area, historical preservation, social encounters. The less we do, the less problem we'll have with social encounters on the trails. The less trails we build, the less people that will come here. If we have a wonderful trail from the Lightning Ridge to wherever, I mean, that they're all wonderful loops, and I don't have anything against any one of the particular jobs. But I'm real concerned about when do we start to say enough is enough. And you don't have to respond if you don't want to. I just want to say these things. I think that Holden needs to care. Forest Service for a long time basically pushed things down, burnt things up, and mold them over and allowed it to go back to nature. And now we're looking at preserving those things. And so it certainly, it's refreshing to know that that's kind of a change. But I'm real concerned that in the end, we're going to have Holden Village, 40 miles of trail around it, and a population that is not what I think I want from Holden Village. And there's so much talk about the social encounter, the whole idea of loop trails, and I'm not against anything particularly, but when I pass a person on a trail, once I'm 100 feet, it's really not important to me anymore. And just for the what it's worth department.
What I've heard in the last few comments from the Holden staff is a kind of a fear. It sounds to me like a fear of losing control of the place, of maybe having of not being able to control the environment around them because they aren't players in all the decisions, maybe. And I don't know if that's necessarily true, but I think that's what I'm hearing. I hear people ask questions that if this becomes on the historic register, anytime we want to, anytime we're going to need to change a door lock, we're going to need to write the state. Anytime we need to do something, what I hear is people saying or fearing that they're losing control, and I don't know if that's necessarily accurate, but I think those are the emotions that these I feel people are expressing.
Well, I was going to say I would really encourage you to do some of these trails for walkers and strollers, and I'm very heartened to see that is on the plan as a possible idea, because I think I would, Tom, I know what you're saying, I mean, about being very cautious about development. I don't want you to do everything you've proposed tonight, or maybe not even most of it, I don't know, but a lot of it sounds good to me. But I think that we who love to hike in the wilderness area are loving it to death and need other alternatives to the Holden Lake, Heart Lake, Copper Basin, Lyman, Image, Body Pass business, and need to learn to hike other places. I would encourage you to develop some of these and do like booklets too that would guide, that would sort of give us a really high quality experience without having to see the spectacular things that you do in the wilderness area with lakes. I mean, you aren't proposing any lakes here, but if there were a really good booklet and some really good interpretation, I think it could be a really high quality wilderness kind of experience without so much impact on the wilderness. And I also think that for a lot of our guests, it would be very, very satisfactory to not have to do so much up and down. I think some of these would really be good.
One of the things that strikes me about Holden, and this is my first visit here, but if you you just watching this past weekend, the folks who walk up and down the road, I would suggest that you could walk up and down the road in Cleveland, Ohio. But if you come to Holden, it would really be desirable to walk on a trail that is in a unique natural setting. I think that's some of the ideas that were talked about with this trail group, particularly on some of these walks and trails, is to provide that kind of an opportunity. And I think as we talked about in the wilderness, that you also are conscious of the need to do that, because you only allow 30 people a day, I think was the figure, to go into that area. So there's some things that we can do to provide that type of a wilderness experience by providing some alternative routes. And that's, I think, is some of the concepts and ideas that the trail group looked at as they were crafting this. And I think the other part is that many of these ideas are concepts in nature, and it has to be the next step in the feasibility. How feasible is it to make that happen? Is it desirable? And those are the the next questions, and that's, I think we're, you know, we'll share. Joe?
I'd like to make a comment on this, where the money comes from. The money is not from receipts that the Forest Service gets from timber harvesting. The money that comes for trail development or recreation development is generally a congressional appropriation. And really there the competition is more military spending versus the social tax spending. So hopefully the part of this peace dividend will provide more money for this type of development. So I really believe what we're doing is socially responsible. It gives us, you know, something kind of peaceful that we can utilize rather than a missile, perhaps.
I think just one quick comment on that. I think, Tom, as I look around the region and where, you know, we're making investments in, whether it's trails or, you know, campgrounds or whatever, you know, we've got, you know, such a sense of, you know, what is it that the folks are asking for us to do in terms of delivery of services, that we're not going to be building something just to be building it. You know, I really am confident that that's not going to happen. And you know, we're also conscious about, you know, the experience. And we didn't talk about this one map, but I'd like to show you that map after we get done, because it captures the idea of managing for a particular type of experience. And we're not going to build something that's going to change that experience level.
Whether or not, it still increases people. And once you increase people, you get to deal with all the other issues. We'll continue.
Right.
Well, I guess in this parallel, as Tom's concern is that is, we've got some people feeling that it won't increase people, and other people feeling that it will. I think that that's a serious question that ought to be addressed by a group of people that really know how to determine these kind of things statistically or whatever, and it ought to be part of the plan. It's something, this needs to be attended to before, you know, in order to base decisions like this on. Because certainly you reach a point where people, or there's a possibility of reaching a point where people come to Holden and they think, you know, well, yeah, we got to be part of the community, but we really don't care about that. You know, we like it's a great place to go do all these other things, and pretty soon you have them competing for spaces with people that really want the entire experience. They push them out, and they affect the community.
Randy.
Yeah, I just I don't think it's been brought up at any point, and I guess I just like to say that, regardless of what we do or what we talk about, people are going to keep coming and coming and coming. As a builder from the Puget Sound area, these Californians who buy a property and settle over there or can't find property because the men left are going to find their vacation homes or their permanent homes over here in the Chelan area, and they're going to come up Lake, and they're going to start coming up the trails. And personally, I prefer to see some of that use go into the roadless area here, and under, you know, manageable trail systems, and leave some of the wilderness impact unimpacted, and for those of us who might want to see that disbursement.